Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Do you agree with the ambulance staff holding this strike action today, obviously continuing till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, all over this pay dispute? And as you heard Ellen mention in the news there as well, Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, now calling on ambulance staff to end the strike action, describing it as not satisfactory. How do you feel though? Do you support the ambulance personnel that are out in the picket lines today, albeit I know some still, you know, providing emergency care? Do you support their move, or how do you feel about this? Angie Bailey is a Fine Gael councillor in Tralee in County Kerry. Angie's with us on the programme today because you've had some experience with the ambulance service, Angie.
A very, very positive experience with the ambulance. It was at our, before Christmas time when we needed an ambulance, it was our first time ever engaging the services of an ambulance, and we just found the care to be absolutely incredible, very professional. They came into the home, they were able to immediately see what was happening, take care of the patient, who was my mum, and they gave her the care and treatment that she needed. That was very, very critical before bringing her into the hospital. So for us, the experience with the ambulance was very, very positive, and it was one I would like to see replicated in many homes across the country. Mm. I had been speaking about the ambulances because of the abuse, not on this particular issue, but on the abuse of the actual system in terms of how it is used and how it is perceived as being able to transport people, maybe not just for critical care, but for reasons that may not involve medical or serious
this
medical
was people,
issues as well.
Yeah, people you could call an ambulance services and not really require an emergency care. That's right, I remember talking about that previously. But do you have worries about the consequences of this strike action over a 24-hour period?
Well, I have heard that they're going to still have the 999 service, but I know that for us, the length of time it only took the ambulance crew, I think, 15 minutes to get out of us, which is what it would take someone, it would take longer to drive. So they were there instantly, but we needed every single minute of that. So I would just be hoping that discussions will start immediately, that the dialogue will be opened and that we can resolve this, because I don't think this is an issue from just yesterday. I don't think anyone woke up and said, we're going to start striking today. This is an ongoing issue, and I think that the only way issues like this can be resolved if there is discussion and dialogue around what maybe he said, she said, what was promised, what has been done, has not been done, and what can be done going forward to make sure that this doesn't happen again. You know, nobody wants, I don't believe the ambulance workers for any moment want to see this level of distress in any homes, in particular given the care, the level of care that they provided us, not just my mother, but also us. My sister and I were both there with her, and just the level of support we felt given by them was huge, and it was so important to us at that given time. That's what our ambulance workers and paramedics want to be doing. They don't want to be sitting at any strike line.
No, and to be fair, I mean, to any of the ambulance staff that are out in the picket lines across the country this morning that I've heard talking here, you know, between with Claire and with Anton earlier this morning, that's something they've all said as well, Angie. I mean, they've better places to be. They want to be at work. They don't want to be out on the picket lines at all. So I take from what you're saying that you do support their move today.
Well, I think that the ambulance service has changed in recent years. They have definitely become more like a doctor and a nurse within a moving vehicle to provide that critical care at the spot. I can't say I approve of people waiting for critical care when it is necessary. But as I said, they didn't wake up yesterday morning and say they were going to go on strike. And I think it's just unfortunate that they feel this is the only option available to them to have their voices heard. And I think that going forward, maybe the government and other departments have to maybe enter into discussions before this happens, because we can't keep having services like this limited or in danger of, you know, something happening simply because people just feel their back foot to the wall and they're not having their concerns listened to. And I think that's very, very important. We need to be... We're living in a democracy. We need to be able to nearly foresee the different problems that may arise by not entering into discussions.
Just on that, I suppose, to be fair, I assume what the HSE would likely say if they were with us here, Angie, on the programme today, and by the way, they're more than welcome to join us as always. Like, it is a long-run dispute, and you're right about that, and it was the subject of a report back about 6 years ago as well. There was proposals that were brokered, you know, even at the Workplace Relations Commission. They were rejected, though, by the staff. Like, you know, there was proposals on the table that were rejected as a result when people participated in a ballot. So I suppose, where do you go from here?
I suppose more discussions and more talks. And I have no idea. I know that there was 2020 when there were some independent reviews and talks around what had to be done. I am not sure if there has anything been done, maybe say in the last even half year about this, but I know that the work role of the ambulance and the paramedics has changed quite significantly in terms of their workload, in terms of staffing, in terms of the demands on them, in terms of even say sometimes you have the bad press that might be caused by a lack of ambulances because of an abuse of a service. So I think that a lot of these things probably conglomerate and make the picture look like it might be a bit more one-sided than it is. But of any of the paramedics and the ambulance drivers that I have met, they're certainly not in the game of not wanting to treat the patient. And I can't imagine that they're sitting on the line saying that, yeah, this is what we wanted to do.
No, definitely not. If you're listening to the programme today, if you're tuned into us here in Lunchtime Live, if you're somebody who's experienced, you know, an ambulance service, paramedics like Angie Bailey, they're talking about her mum with her family and the great help and support they got from paramedics who arrived swiftly on the scene. We'd love to hear your stories today. 1800 453 106 is that number. Angie, thank you for getting in touch. We've Catherine with us as well on the line. Catherine, do you support the strike action by ambulance personnel?
Hi, Andrea.
How are you?
I support the strike in principle. I don't know all the details, and I'm a little bit confused about some of the information in the media where it was reported that as a result of the WRC talks and agreements that, you know, they were allegedly getting more, but then some of their conditions were being removed, some of the pay. So I'm a bit confused about that.
It's over the grading, isn't it? It's the grading and the kind of the pay related then to this sort of
shift allowances.
The modernisation, yeah. I suppose, if you want to describe it, maybe as at the service as well. But in principle, you know, like as we mentioned at the outset, this has gone on for a couple of years. I mean, like I've texts here from this listener who tells me my son is a paramedic with the HSE. I can tell you that they're exhausted. They're demoralised. Mm-hmm. They feel the HSE have ignored every recommendation to date. So do you feel this is, you know, the right way, I suppose, to have their message heard? They did flag this well from early last week.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they've done it out of desperation. I would think from what I know of the ambulance crew, and I've had reason to call them for my daughter when she was between the age of 2 and 4.
Have
so
you?
Many times
okay.
the crews actually began to recognise us. They said, oh, we were here before. And I actually bumped into them in a local petrol station and we chatted. So I would have called them a lot for a very ill child who needed an emergency admission. So I have utmost respect for them. And I would think they've only done this out of desperation. Again, this morning in the media, they were talking about this recommendation. This has been brewing since 2020. I mean, I don't know many other sectors. I don't know any private sector establishments where people would put up with this. Do you? Where, you know, it's...
No, it's a fair point. Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's
years
a fair
and
point.
Years of, yeah, you know, and I mean, they do amazing work. I mean,
it's
I know,
incredible job.
You know, they have chosen that career. But I mean, I've had, you know, need to call them in the middle of the night, early in the morning, whatever time I've needed them, they've come, and ambulance crews have come from Kildare. I live in Dublin. At one point, there was a festival up the road in, a couple of summers ago in 2019, and they sent an ambulance crew from Kildare for us because there was a shortage of crews because of that music festival. And it's just like whatever hour of the night and day they come, they're amazing. When you're in a moment of crisis, they calm you down. When you've got an ill child and my daughter's not verbal, she's not able to communicate, they're just amazing. I mean, I cannot say enough about them. And I think this is only done out of desperation and because they've been pushed to the brink. And I think they should be given more respect, like nurses, doctors, other medical professionals. You know, why should they have to go this route? There's get their voice heard.
Another text similar to you, Catherine, here today. A listener says, I do support them. I absolutely support the ambulance personnel. They do such a wonderful and an important job, and they absolutely need to get proper recognition. David Hall is with us as well, Catherine. David is from Lifeline Ambulance. David, look, I've no doubt that you obviously support the strike action, I assume, that's happening today.
Yeah, good afternoon, Andrea. Yeah, look, I'm not speaking on behalf of the ambulance service staff, but 110% support the action today. And many of what your former two speakers have said is the nuts and bolts of what's happened. There's a height of disrespect. You know, the ambulance service staff that are picketing today are more angry at not being able to do calls today than they probably are about the strike action. And the disrespect and the lack of dignity in having to come this far as medical professionals. The sector's changed. The world has changed. The skills have changed. They, you know, very rarely do either negotiations with the WRC that have been referred to earlier on, where staff have rejected those two proposals twice. So the National Ambulance Service staff rejected those twice. Mm. And I think the minister really needs to have a closer look at the ambulance service in its entirety, not just pay, the terms and conditions, the toxicity, everything that goes with the ambulance. This is a very difficult job. These people who are doing this job and are former staff of mine, they're friends and colleagues of mine, who are doing the most difficult job in the most difficult circumstances at the most difficult time. And as your last speaker said, when time is needed, when care is needed, when assistance is needed, to be treated in this way, to be treated with this disrespect, this lack of dignity, is not appropriate and is not fair and reasonable.
Just to David, to cut across you for a second, because I just want to get into a little bit more the nuts and bolts of this. And I've heard some of the union representatives on speaking earlier this morning here in the station as well. But am I right in thinking, like, essentially this dispute boils down to, you have people that are out there, you have paramedics out working within the service. Some of them are paramedics. Others are the EMTs you hear about, the emergency medical technicians. Then you've got advanced paramedics, there's specialists. So there's about 5 or 6 different layers of people, and they feel that their pay isn't, they're not getting the associated pay that they should get that recognises those different levels of tiers. Is that what it is?
Yeah, like the ambulance service has been the poor cousin of the health service for decades, and there's been a massive modernisation been taking place within the entire ambulance service, both public and private and voluntary, throughout the last 10 to 15 years. The number of drugs being administered by paramedics and EMTs and advanced paramedics has increased. The evolution of the new grades you just mentioned there in relation to community paramedics and specialist paramedics, that's all new. But there's been never any recognition of that in relation to pay. And it's not just simply about pay. The modernisation of the service involves financially and sets of circumstances, rostering arrangements. You saw recently where 76 of the student paramedics who are just qualified as paramedics weren't offered contracts despite being given them at the start. It's the entire management and running, yet there's been middle management and administrative staff and other weird grades been promoted and appointed throughout the entire country. So somebody needs to look at the National Ambulance Service as an entirety. It is floating on its own out there. It is part of the HSE. It's funded by the HSE. It is not an independent entity. It is the same as a hospital. But the minister needs to have a look in the round and say, why, when there's pay rises suggested, yet some of the pay is being deducted then by their shift allowance being taken away, why does the staff say no? Why do they vote no on two recommendations that are made? What else is going on within the culture and the environment of the National Ambulance Service? And it is time now, from a public safety perspective, that this happens. None of those ambulance staff today, they're disgusted, I'd say, being outside an ambulance base today, hoping that nothing goes wrong, but having emergency cover that's in place. And again, my own ambulance service, we have the same number of ambulances out every day, which is 45 ambulances today. We're not doing any extra work on behalf of the hospitals or indeed on behalf of the National Ambulance Service. They've all rung, they've all looked for cover. We're standing full square in solidarity with the National Ambulance Service. Our staff rates of pay are benchmarked against the National Ambulance Service, and that's what we look to do in relation to recognising and rewarding the entire sector of professionals. These are professionals now. They're not ambulance drivers anymore, Andrea. Mm. That day is gone, but they're being treated like ambulance drivers, and that now needs to radically change. And the minister must intervene. Don't mind the WRC. The HSC, the National Ambulance Service, and the Department of Health are responsible for today, not the ambulance staff.
Just to give you some of the other texts on this, right? Because, I mean, listeners are split about it, I would say, David. Like, they are divided about whether or not they agree. And look, while the majority, I would say, in the main say, you know, absolutely, they recognise the Trojan work the paramedics do, there's texters like this listener who says, you know, like, all of the stories about the ambulance crew doing a great job and they're being wonderful, it's actually irrelevant to the issue. I haven't heard anything so far that isn't within their job or within their remit of what they're supposed to do. It's the view of one texter.
But the only thing I'd say to the and look, I've been very respectful in my reply to say, I want the paramedic to have the option of giving you 24 drugs, not 12. They now can give you 24 drugs. Life has changed. Things have moved on. Equipment has moved on.
And they have to train extra to be able to do that.
Extra hard and do that. And all the different technology has changed. Everything has changed. And that's what you need to do is grow, develop, research, educate, continue your education. Once you add on 24 drugs to maintain those skills, every year the pre-hospital council adds on additional clinical activity. Those clinical activities, to be absolutely clear, save lives.
No, another texter here.
Save lives every day.
Another texter here makes the point. You know, give them the money. Give them the millions that the farmers were able to get. I mean, when they went out and
protested. It's not even millions. Like we're behind the pay curve. Like we continually say our healthcare professionals are wonderful and are great, and we are delighted. When you're at the side of a road in the lashings of rain, with a massive catastrophic injury, or you're having a cardiac arrest or resuscitation, or your child is sick, that's when you want somebody completely focused and respected to ensure they deliver the care. We've probably got the best ambulance service in the world from a staffing perspective. We have an absolutely crap ambulance service from a management perspective. And unfortunately, we need to be working in both sectors. But we need to it's not about rewarding somebody or giving somebody money. Their starting point is below where it should be. It is not comparable to the fire service. It's not comparable to other ambulance services around
comparable
Europe
to nursing staff?
It's not even like nursing staff are paid crap as well. Like this, we expect miracles from a health service, and we don't. And this is not about overpaying somebody. This is about paying somebody a living wage, respectfully, where they don't start stop all day.
Stay with us, David. 1800 453 106 is the number. We've the parent of a paramedic who's just got in touch with us. Brian is on the line. Brian, good afternoon.
Hi, Andrea. How are you today?
Not bad at all. So it's your son or daughter. Somebody in your house is a paramedic,
yeah, son,
is that right?
Son, yeah. Well, actually, yeah, he's no longer living with us. He's out and got his own place in the world. But he's at it over a decade. And look, I was only talking to him last night. And I think this is just the straw, to be honest with you. They're fatigued. They're exhausted. They've been slapped in the face so many times by the HSE. They just had enough. And I know myself, he's a good lad, as is all of his colleagues, and they don't want to be on the picket line. They want to be out helping people. It's in their nature. It's what they signed up to do. And they just simply had enough, Andrea.
They don't feel they're getting the financial rewards, Brian, you know, for what they're doing.
Yeah, the financial reward is, of course, important. I mean, we're living in a cost of living
crisis. Absolutely, yeah.
But on top of all that, it's just, like, I'm just going to give you a quick example.
Yeah,
like,
I do.
Okay, so about 18 months ago there, he is a paramedic, he went on the panel to become an advanced paramedic. So went through this exhaustive process, and then they said, yeah, okay, you're certainly of the calibre we want, so we put you on the next training camp or whichever. And then they put a pause on it. And then he got a letter there recently to say, we're starting the whole process again, the last process has been totally ignored, and everybody has to start from scratch again.
So that's all the training and prep and everything for that.
Well, and I don't know how many interviews he did, and he had to go and you know, and it's just he's just going. So what's the point to do these things? It's just going to scrap the whole thing. And like he's a hard working young lad, and he was telling me now that they're talking about moving some of the ambulance into a new proposed ambulance centre up in off the Belgrade Road. And the initial proposal is they're going to put 12 to 14 ambulances on site there, just on the Belgrade Road. And when they looked up at the plans, now I know it's only initial and it hasn't been finalised, 12 to 14 ambulance plus HSE management are going to be in there. Right, two person per ambulance. And when they looked it up, the six parking spaces allotted for everybody.
For the whole lot?
That's the initial plan. Now, hopefully,
and these are on social hours as well. I mean, that they're working too.
I mean, they have their kids, they have all their gear. I mean, you know, what's he supposed to do? Get two buses, and like just because you're rostered from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or vice versa, or 8 to 8, that doesn't mean you finish. You know, he could be down in Wicklow when he's supposed to be logging off, and he's not, and he brings somebody from Wicklow into, we say, Vincent's Elm Park or something, and then back to his port, and then. Like, it's not uncommon for him to be an extra hour, you know, on the shift.
Oh, I'd well believe it. And then
get
commute
two buses home.
Together.
And get two buses home. And again, it's just disrespect on and on and on. And at the end of the day, they're doing a difficult job.
Yeah.
We don't need to imagine the sorts of things they have to face into in the modern world and road traffic accidents and, you know, everything. And sometimes people are having extremely bad days and actions are taken and all that. And these are the first people who go in and face all of that.
Yeah.
They're the only ones, they're the ones and the guards who actually go into the front line and face the stuff that we'd normally walk away from. And this is how they're being treated. It's disgraceful.
Would you say, Brian, from talking to your son, would you say, is he totally demoralised with this?
Oh, yeah. Look, he's just had enough. And as well as that, there's an awful lot of people, I'm going to be blunt with you, there's an awful lot of people in the management that have never worked in the system. They don't work on the front line. They don't understand. You know, like, for example, there was they got a memo there recently to say that in order for them to restock an ambulance, so they do 3 or 4 call-outs, and then in order for them to restock an ambulance, they have to call a senior manager to get approval to go back to the station. So what do they do in the meantime? Stand on the side of the road until they get approval? Like, it's just this nonsense about people who are kind of managers, managing managers in the HSE. And I wouldn't mind, but those people put their hand up to get a pay rise, no problem. And yet the frontline people who are in the thick of it, you know,
and dealing with all sorts. I can only imagine some of the night shifts.
I wouldn't like to tell you the stuff they have to deal with. And that's, you know, for another day. You've highlighted many a thing on the programme about modern day life. The stuff they have to deal with is appalling.
It's
absolutely appalling. Let's not bring everybody down. And the least the government could do is put their hands in their pockets. We're running surplus and go, do you know what, lads? We value what you do. You mean something to us.
Mm.
And we appreciate it. And we're going to put our hands in our pockets and we're going to just show you how much we appreciate it.
And
we're not going to stop waffling on about you know, Labour Court and all this type of thing. Every recommendation that has been brought up so far has been ignored.
Mm.
So what's the point in going to a place like the Labour Court and all this? Because every time they get to the table, they're ignored. Independent people have come out and said, listen, guys, you deserve this. You deserve a better structure. Your manager should have the understanding and frontline knowledge about what's going on. And they don't.
And how is your son feeling today, Brian, when you spoke to him? Like, I know this kicked off at 8 this morning and it'll go on now till 8 tomorrow morning.
I spoke to him last night. It's mixed emotions.
Yeah.
He feels he's sorry that he's come to this, and look, I'm going to be honest with you, he doesn't want to be out there striking. He'd be happier to be in his ambulance with his colleague and making a difference. You ask him any day, 7 days a week, you know, 365, that's what they want to do. They're a different calibre to the rest of us. You know, when he's having a bad day, they still go out and do it. If they go to something that's happened, let's not go into it, but if they go to something that's happened, they get demoralised a little bit and it's a terrible tragedy or whatever, they get a cup of coffee and they're back into the ambulance and they're going in again. Time after time after time, week after week, year after year.
Well, Brian, fair play to you for ringing in today.
Yeah,
and
God bless. I mean, thanks for highlighting it. Yeah, we do appreciate it.
Not at all. No, we appreciate you getting in touch and you know, telling us it was exactly the reality of the situation there. There's plenty more getting in contact. You know, we're going to come back to this after 1 o'clock as well today. That's Brian there, who's the dad of a paramedic. We also have David Hall there from Lifeline Ambulance. Angie Bailey, who's a Fine Gael councillor, and Kerry Catherine as well. There's plenty more getting in touch. Mary is with me on the line. Mary, you were listening to the first part of the programme. Why did you get in touch?
I got in touch because my son was living in Aberdeen. And 3 years ago, just before Christmas, he had two young boys in the car, his two young sons in the car with him. And he obviously was having a heart attack. And the ambulance were on strike, but they would do emergency call-outs. However, when he rang, I presume it was he who made the first call, and he was 10 minutes from the hospital. The ambulance could only reach him now on an emergency in an hour and a half, and by that time, he had died on the side
of the
road.
Mary.
Yes, so I don't agree that the ambulance people should be on strike. My son was a victim or a sacrifice for their cause, and his family, his wife, all of us have had to suffer for whatever increase they got in their salary.
Their job is to look after
the public, and I feel sorry for anybody in Ireland who gets a heart attack today because they will not get to hospital on time.
It was only 3 years ago, Mary. In Scotland.
3 years ago, he was 47 at that time. He had, as I said, two young boys. The eldest was 10, who was trying to make calls. And he had never been sick, let me add. It was totally out of the blue. And we've all suffered dreadfully because of the ambulance strike.
And this was, as you say, was in Aberdeen in Scotland, and there was some kind of stoppage or picket or something by ambulance staff there that particular day.
Yes, on that particular time, exactly. And they would have, of course, like what they say, they do have their emergency service out. Mm. But if an hour and a half gets you nowhere.
And he was, you say your son was about 10 minutes from
the main hospital in Aberdeen.
Yeah. And when he contacted, and he had to contact them himself because he was in the car with the two young boys in the back.
Yes. And we're lucky he didn't, you know, that they didn't die as well. But anyway, I mean, it's been an absolutely traumatic occasion for the boys witness it.
Oh, my gosh.
And my faith in the ambulance service just went to zero. And their job is to look after people. That's why they signed up for it.
And on that particular day, Mary, when you know, and look, and I'm, you know, I'm not sure what the dispute was about in that particular case, as you said 3 years ago in Aberdeen in Scotland. But like that, I'm sure you had been aware, or you know, people were aware at the time that it had been said that, you know, the even though the dispute is ongoing or the picket is happening, that emergency cases would be attended, or critical cases
absolutely.
Get ambulance cover. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But that's, as I said, an hour and a half is no time when you're having a heart attack. That's it.
You must have, my God, Mary, getting that phone call for you.
Well, that was Christmas, maybe 2 days before Christmas or something. Gosh. I've forgotten, 22nd of December. It was absolutely shocking. And as I said, he'd never been sick, and it was... We really feel that the ambulance service let us down, because he would have survived if they had been around and given him immediate attention.
And Justin, this was, as you say, this happened in Scotland, and not obviously, you know, he couldn't have been that rural either. I mean, if he was, you know, so close, or
wasn't.
10 minutes.
No, he wasn't rural at all.
No.
The only good thing about it was he was able to pull over.
And how are you doing, Mary?
Well, we're all...
You're heartbroken.
I mean, his children, it's really for his family and his wife. It's been more than difficult.
Yeah. And so when you heard about this strike action, and look, I appreciate it's a different jurisdiction and a different situation, but...
My heart goes out to anybody who has an emergency today, because they won't get attention. No matter what they say, they won't be there to attend to them.
And I know that, you know, obviously the paramedics that were, you know, out this morning, and the union representatives talking about the fact that there, you know, there is the critical care cover that's there. And
no, it doesn't. It won't work. That won't work. They can say all that, but that is not going to work. And it's too bad for the people who will die today.
And for people, and when you maybe hear some of the paramedics talking about how they feel they're being treated and that their concerns haven't been listened to.
Yeah, that's a different subject. That's a mediation thing. That is not the people like my son doesn't have to die for what they have to do. They have their job. They get paid, you know, through mediation with whoever's in charge. But their job, and they went into the ambulance service to look after people. That is their job.
Mary, look, I'm really, you know, I know this it must be a very difficult, it's a very difficult story for you to share and experience, and I've no doubt about that, and I do appreciate you.
I would never, ever go on radio, but when I hear them talking, I just think, do they really realise that people's lives are important?
The reality
I know your
is.
Pay packet is important, but people's lives are important.
Well, Mary, I'm so sorry to hear about your person and your grandkids, and you know, it's the two boys in Scotland, and I hope you get over to see them, and
you get over but, and back. You know, nothing takes the place of their dad.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah, anyway, thank you very much.
Not at all. Well, look, I really appreciate, Mary, you getting in touch today, and I can tell you there's a lot of sympathy for Mary here today on the line. Listener says, I'm so very, very sorry to hear about that lady's son. Another listener as well getting in touch to say, just God love Mary, my heart absolutely goes out to her. I'm crying in my own car today thinking of what she went through. Just God almighty, it's so, so difficult for her. That's Mary with us here in the programme today, and as I said, just she heard some of the callers that were with us at 12 o'clock this afternoon and wanted to get in touch and share her own experience, which you're all entitled to do. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Veronica's on the line. Veronica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, I appreciate you getting in touch.
I'm down here now in Dingle, and being a nurse, I have first-hand knowledge of the paramedics. They work very hard. And yes, I agree that they should go out and strike, but not all out. It should be part, maybe. They should have a skeleton staff on, probably. Because here now in Dingle, it's at the outreach. And I know the ambulance personnel, they have to travel quite, their catchment here is quite distant. Mm. They have to go to Tralee, Killarney, and, you know, they could work their schedule is four nights on. And during the four nights on, you could be called in to Tralee, and it could be supposed to be finishing at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you might get a call up to Limerick, up to Cork. So you might get home back to base to Dingle at maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're expected to report onto a shift then in the night, starting again at 8 o'clock. So I know their job is quite challenging in many ways. And another point would be is sometimes when the majority of times they have to go to domestic scenes, they have to bring the personnel on board as well, because they are very challenging situations going in, and they have been met with quite challenging that, so that it could be life threatening as well, that when they go into these houses, they don't know what they're faced with. That's another point as well. So their job is, and they are highly qualified, highly skilled, and many of them have taken on advanced paramedic courses.
Yeah, additional and training and services, right, and all of that, yeah.
Absolutely, and they also can do as much as a doctor can on the side of the road, if need be. And I do, my heart goes out to Mary and in Aberdeen, which I just think is a traumatic.
I'm sure it's
situation.
A very difficult day for her. And I think people, I mean, sure. And to be fair, I think a lot of our listeners can listen to the callers that were with us earlier today and, you know, sharing their own stories, working as paramedics and family members of paramedics. But I think in the same vein, you can listen to Mary and, you know, and my God, feel for her today as well, you know, and it's an incredibly difficult story. And I'm sure today is a difficult day for her as well, and listening to the strike action and thinking about her own situation, as she said herself, albeit in Scotland. But I've no doubt this is a hard day for her as well. Veronica, you're working as a nurse.
Like, that's
one,
right.
One of the points that was made earlier today by family members of paramedics is that, you know, that they don't get the same respect as other healthcare workers, you know, that they feel demoralised. Like, do you ever witness that, or have you seen that or experienced that?
Well, not firsthand now, but I just know what their working conditions isn't like, is they're not getting paid for what they have to go through, you know, and like being treated, maltreated. I don't think so, unless, as I say, I haven't come across it directly, but say coming to houses situations, I can feel for them that they're coming to a house, they don't know what's going on in the house, and a lot of times they're drug related, and they have to bring the police in as well, and they're feeling very much threatened, you know. I mean, to be out in a job and to work as a nurse is fine. I mean, you're in an environment of a hospital community, you've got the support of the hospital personnel and securities there on hand. I mean, these people are very vulnerable. The paramedics are out at the door side, coming to a call to a house, which is, you know, happening quite regularly, and they don't know what they're facing when they go in, you know. Mm. And they have somebody maybe murdered inside. We have a man with a knife trying to kill everybody and kill the personnel who's there. So, like, they're really putting their life on the line as well. So, yeah, from that point of view.
So, you know, agree with the strike action today, then? You do?
Well, not 100% now, in fairness, but I would say they should have a skeleton staff on it.
Yeah, well, they do. They do. Like, no, they do. Yeah. To be fair, the critical services are being provided, you know, and they've made that point that, like, there's emergency cover in place, like, anyone in need, you know, can still avail of medical assistance. It's still the 999 number as well, and that is being staffed through Ballyshannon and Tala and the control centres. So I suppose just to be clear as well, you know, for listeners today, that critical care cover is there. Veronica, listen, I appreciate you getting in touch with us. It's 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number. Tony is with us on the line today. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Not bad, Tony. You are a first responder. Is that right?
I'm a community first responder. I'm not paramedic or advanced paramedic, but we would interact with NAST crews and Dublin Fire Brigade crews on calls in our set area.
So you're not part of the strike action today then, no?
Oh, absolutely not. No, we're just voluntary. The community first responders are voluntary.
Okay, but do you support the strike action today?
Well, I think yes. Like they should be on a better pay scale, I think, because of what they do. Like, and the situations, I mean, to say they turn up situations that nobody ever wants to see in a lifetime. Horrific road traffic collisions, unfortunate suicide, stuff like that. Now, we do respond to certain issues as well, but we wouldn't be responding to road traffic collisions or anything like that. So they do, like, similarly, nurses have to, and doctors have to deal with the same situation when the unfortunate people arrive into casualty, and Gardaí, obviously the same thing. But I do have sympathy, like, but one of the main reasons I was bringing in was because there is cover for critical situations like cardiac arrest, respiratory arrest, like that is still fully being covered.
Oh, you were listening to Mary a few moments ago on her story.
You mentioned that a few minutes ago there, that there is cover there. For I had a situation this morning and I had a DFB ambulance arrive on scene. A bit delayed, but it did arrive. So, like, if just the people aren't thinking that there's nothing available there if they dial 999, there is.
That's for the cardiac arrest or any kind of respiratory issues or strokes, you know, any of that critical.
Anything like that is critical, yes.
You will be attended to if you, and the 999.
As far as I'm aware, that is given priority and there should be response there for that. It's unfortunately the lesser critical situations that would probably not get the same response and there might be a delay, but... look, that can happen at the best of times. If someone has a non-life-threatening situation and an ambulance is on their way to them, it can easily be diverted to a more critical situation like a cardiac arrest or respiratory arrest at any time without any of the situation that's in place today anyway.
I'm sure, though, even aside from all of that, Tony, you can appreciate how difficult, I suppose, today must be for that for Mary, the caller who got in touch.
Absolutely. My God, yes. I was listening to that lady on the phone. Yes, absolutely.
You'd want to be made of stone, really, wouldn't you? Not to, you know, be moved by her story today.
Yes,
it was
pretty
remarkable.
The comment I was going to make was that there is cover there, and it's reiterate yourself anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're right to make that point, Tony, because it's a point worth making, and it's important that listeners are acutely aware of that as well. You know that despite the strike, that there is emergency cover in place, and patients that are in need of emergency medical assistance here, that they will get that. It's the 999 number, and you'll get that as well. Another texter getting in touch to say, I'm absolutely bawling listening to Mary. You know, the injustice for that poor family. A skeleton staff on critical care, is it still being met? Anyone who ever phones emergency numbers and needs critical assistance, just a point been made here by another one of our listeners today. Journalist Tina Gates is with us on the programme. I mean, Tina, you yourself, you've had experience as well of ambulance services.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been a frequent flyer in terms of using the service because I used to look after my dad who had dementia and he'd fall off. And so we had lots of, incidents where they came to our help, and the boys and the girls, and they were fantastic, so reassuring, so kind, so skilled, so fantastic. But in my own personal experience, they literally, and I mean literally, saved my life in 2023. I had rung DDoc because I just felt unwell. And at the time, I didn't realise, and I think it's important for people to know, that women can experience heart attacks in a different way to men. the physical outcome or the physical symptoms are actually difficult, different. So just feeling nauseous or feeling stressed or tension can be a sign of a heart attack in a woman. And in my case, I was having a heart attack. I didn't realize it. The triage nurse at the DDoC felt that there was enough reason to send an ambulance around just to check me over. So the team arrived, and their paramedic crews, who are so insanely well trained in this country, they put me onto an ECG. They diagnosed the fact that I was actually in arrest. They gave me treatment in the ambulance as they brought me to hospital, while they helped arrange care for my father, who was alone in the house. At the same time, they used the acute care fast track system, which we also have in this country, which I don't think gets enough notice. And that's the hospital called in their surgeons and their theatre crews who were on call. I was brought not to A&E. We bypassed A&E. The crews have their own access to a lift, which brought us straight up to theatre. And they remained in the hospital waiting for me to bring me forward after I'd had a stent fitted. So from beginning to
above
end,
and
from
beyond
the moment they arrived,
yeah,
from the moment they arrived at my door until the me going through surgery and having a stent fitted, that all happened in less than an hour. I mean, to me, that's just, you know, extraordinary. They quite literally, I mean, the skill set that our paramedics and our ambulance crews in this country have,
it's unbelievable.
Are absolutely, you know, they're incomparable. We're really, really, you know, above the curve in terms of the skill sets that they have. And yet these people are also, as some of your other callers have mentioned, they're also, you know, going to crashes where they see unthinkable situations and have to get into nearly like it's like a war zone when you go to some road crashes, unfortunately. They also have to deal then with the response to the public, which can be very, you know, challenging, drink and drug, angry, aggressive, scared people reacting badly. They can be spit on. They can be physically abused. They can be verbally and physically abused. All of these things, they soak
it's not
up
an
as
easy
part
job.
Of their job.
No, not
they
by any
do
stretch.
Not complain.
And do you support the you support the strike then today, Tina? You do.
I totally do support the strike. But here's the thing. It shouldn't happen, but it's not the fault of the ambulance crews. It's the fault of our leaders who should be negotiating through this and should never have let it come to this stage. I have been reporting on ambulance services and not just paying conditions, but also access to new equipment, access to new vans. For the last 20 years, they've been calling for.
Well,
respect, they're talking about official respect, as in.
Just on that, Tina, I just want to mention that, you know, the SIP2 health organisers have called for the health minister and HSE to come to the table for talks on this, and that, and yet just in the past hour and a half, Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, calling on the National Ambulance Service to end the strike action, saying that it's not satisfactory. Take a listen to Brian. Brian got in touch with us a little earlier today to tell us about his son, who is a paramedic.
I think this is just the straw, to be honest with you. They've just They're fatigued, they're exhausted, they've been slapped in the face so many times by the HSE. They just had enough. And I know myself, he's a good lad, as is all of his colleagues, and they don't want to be on the picket line. They want to be out helping people. It's in their nature, it's what they signed up to do. And they just simply had enough. I think about 18 months ago there, he is a paramedic, he went on the panel to become an advanced paramedic. So went through this exhaustive process. And then they said, yeah, okay, you're certainly of the calibre we want, so we put you on the next training camp or whichever. And then they put a pause on it. And then he got a letter there recently to say, we're starting the whole process again. The last process has been totally ignored and everybody has to start from scratch again. I don't know how many interviews he did and he had to go and it's just, he's just going, so what's the point to do these things? It's just going to scrap the whole thing. And like, he's a hard-working young lad. And like, just because you're rostered from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or vice versa, or 8 to 8, that doesn't mean you're finished. You know, he could be down in Wicklow when he's supposed to be logging off, and he's not, and he brings somebody from Wicklow into, we say, Vincent's Elm Park or something, and then back to his port, and then, like, it's not uncommon for him to be next. Disrespect on and on and on. And at the end of the day, they're doing a difficult job.
Yeah.
We don't need to imagine the sort of things they have to face into in the modern world, and road traffic accidents and you know, everything, and sometimes people are having extremely bad days and actions are taken and all that. And these are the first people who go in and face all of that.
Yeah.
They're the only ones, they're the ones and the guards who actually go into the front line and face the stuff that we'd normally walk away from. And this is how they're being treated.
So this is Brian, who was with us a little earlier today, speaking on behalf of his son, who is a paramedic and part of that strike action, been taken by ambulance personnel. Caroline has got in touch with us to praise the care that she's received from paramedics.
My name is Caroline Burke. In relation to the actual ambulance conversation, 2 years ago, I was taken from my house with sepsis and cellulitis flying up my leg. I cannot praise the Limerick unit that came to the house, the lady and the gentleman that was driving that ambulance. It was superb. It was so superb, the service. I know Limerick Hospital gets an awful bad rap, but this hospital had the ambulance people come back to check that I was okay and that I was receiving attention. Hello? Something needs to give here. The government needs to step up and pay those people correctly for the wonderful job they do.
So that's Caroline, another listener. This texter here, though, says, you know, that the strike today isn't on a whim. It's been coming a long time. It's the last resort. The government haven't listened. Perhaps they will now, though. And just we'll take one more for the moment from this texter who says, it's not fair that our paramedics have to go out on strike. Mary's story is so moving, but I feel the culprit here is the government. They're clearly not up to the mark in managing this situation across the board. Farmers, nurses, construction, transport is broken and seems to be going to get worse. My own wife is a clinical nurse manager. Retired early. As she said, the system is broken and is about to crash. It's not happening on her watch, though. I agree with the strike today and I feel the whole country needs to come to a halt and call out the government in relation to this. That's the view of another texter. Look, keep your thoughts coming into us. You can email us lunchtimelivenewstalk.com. That's Caroline, Veronica, Tina and my sincere thanks there to Mary as well, who got in touch to share her really incredibly moving story with us today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.